There's a drive way back. It might be. It could be. It is. Holy cow. Welcome to another broadcast of Bricks Behind the Ivy. Here's your host, Jeff and Sean.
Hey, hey, Cub fans. Welcome back to another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy, episode 10. And if you're watching on video, no, we are not wearing tuxedos to celebrate the occasion. We are wearing Cub stuff because that is the only way to dress when you're doing a Cubs podcast. Ain't that right, Sean?
That is 100% correct. You got to represent the Cubs. And even in the highs and lows of the season, which we had this past week, it seems like.
Yeah, I think I'm going to need an extra session of therapy this week just to get two of those games. But, you know, I'm glad that I have that guy on speed dial. No name drops so I can retain my privacy. But I am always Jeff Rogowski's Candid Cubs. With me is Sean Hot Stove Cubbies Chapin. And if you're watching with us on video, you'll notice we have a guest. Joining us today is IFG, Infield Fly Girl. She is a Cubs convert of the Sammy Sosa era. I am also guilty of those things. Who fell headlong into Taiwanese baseball during the 2020 shutdown. Another thing I can relate to. And she's never met a bandwagon she didn't want to take for a spin. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, so today we're going to go through our general week review of the games that we saw or wish we didn't see. And IFG is going to kind of give us some of her perspectives on what she's seen in the season as well. And then we're going to get into a conversation about some of the teams she follows outside of the major leagues in Taiwan and Japan and such, and give us her perspective on how Shota's performed and other people that we may want to keep on the radar as they potentially transition to U.S. baseball in the next few years. So awesome. Without further ado, without any objections, I think we're going to run through the box scores. Are you guys ready?
I'm so excited. I love when you do this.
It's funny that you love it. I've only done it once. So, like,
this is. I know. I've listened to the podcast a few times and I'm in amazement. The talent there, Jeff.
You know, it's funny. I played the podcast for my wife in the car the other day and the box score thing because I was like weirdly hyped about it because you got me so hyped about it. And she had asked me if anyone over at NPR as husbands or wives have to listen to their podcasts and give reviews on the fly, or if this was exclusive to Cub podcasts. And I told her, I don't know. I don't know Garrison Keillor, and I can't ask. So we'll assume it's exclusive to Cub podcasts filmed in this basement. So without further ado, we have the box score blitz. Game one, Friday, the Dodgers come to town as the World Series favorites while the Feds stay at the sportsbook looking for eBay and Ohtani. Bobby Miller versus Kyle Hendricks in game one. Hendricks was in early trouble, gave up two runs in the first inning, something he had a problem with last year, and a two-run Teoscar Hernandez single. But don't worry, the bats awaken, or the bats begin, like Batman Begins. Filmed in Chicago, isn't that cool? They had a five-run second. We had a Dansby Swanson and Michael Busch dinger. Ohtani gambles on a pitch down the middle, hits it out of the park for his first home run at Wrigley, but Alzolay pumps the fist, play the damn song, Cubs win 9-7. Game two, we get to see Yoshinobu Yamamoto for the first time. His first time at Wrigley, he puts the spikes on the tarp, people get mad. He's facing off against Jordan Wicks. Wicks looked great again, maybe in a little shorter than we wanted to see, but 4.2 innings, 12 whiffs. Yamamoto had 13 whiffs, so take that. This young kid's got more than the phenom from Japan, so we didn't have to pay for him. Nice. Missed opportunity for him not to be on this team. But it wasn't the best game for the Cubs. They had a missed opportunity in the first inning. They only had four hard hit balls, meaning balls hit over 95 miles per hour in the game. They lose 5-1. Not fun. And we got the swing game on Sunday, game three of the Dodgers series. It's Gavin Stone versus Shota Imanaga. He's called Gavin Stone because he tends to get rocked. He gives up a bunch of runs early, 7 runs, in fact, in a rainy, terrible day at Wrigley Field. Miguel Rojas cries so hard they have to put the tarp on for a few hours. Huge rain delay. Cubs end up winning that game. Hours later, we get to sing the song, and we're off to San Diego, taking 2 of 3 from the world champion preseason favorites. Padres
Love
game one. Absolutely. Padres game one was so fun until it wasn't, which was a theme from last week. They score 8 runs early. The ass man comes in and shoves for 5. Council tries to push him a little bit as the bullpen's taxed from being a little bit overused from having to be pitched on Sunday in a game that ended up being longer than they anticipated because of the weather. Gets hit around, bullpen comes in, does nothing. They brought in a pitching machine, Jose Claus, and he got hit really hard. Did not walk people, just got hit really hard. And all of a sudden, it was 8-7. They bring in Adbert. He hangs a slider that Tatis hits to the moon prior to the solar eclipse. Cubs lose 9-8. First time they blew an 8-0 lead since June 28th, 2002 versus the White Sox. Padres game 2.
No, you said it right the first time.
No, I know. Padres game 2. I wake up on Tuesday morning sad, grumpy, and not wanting to talk to anyone at work. But game 2 was the cure. Morale, grand slam, a little bit of morale. And what can Brown do for you? He not only can ship at reasonable rates, but he can shove at 4.2 and 5 Ks. A bunch of whiffs. Cubs totally redeem themselves like Lloyd Christmas and Dumb and Dumber when game 2. And move on to game 3. We have Kyle Hendricks pitching the second time in the 6-game spread. He had an inning of bad luck of sub-70 contact to turn the runs, and then he had an inning of bad pitching of over 100 mile per hour contact. This turns into a laugher real quick. Cubs get blown out. End the week 3-3. Hap is the highlight of the week, being on base all 12 games via hit or walk to start the year. And that's the box score blitz. Wow, clap.
Perfect, beautiful.
I'm leaving the clap in, and I'm playing it for my wife, and I'm going to tell her that I talked to Garrison Keillor, and he said he does do it. So, anywho, do you guys have any thoughts on this week? 3-3 doesn't feel as bad as 2 of those losses did.
Well, congratulations to Yoshinobu Yamamoto for his first major league win, and he got to do it at beautiful historic Wrigley Field, so, you know, good for him. And nothing tastes better than meatloaf against the Dodgers. I'll take it. I so appreciate the sheer vindication that Christopher Morel is giving me. I'm a longtime fan. I follow Dominican Winter League, and my team is the Águilas Cibaeñas. And Christopher has been so fun to watch in that league for years now. And I'm like, everybody, y'all need to pay attention to this Morel kid. He's so fun. He's so great. And people are like, there's no room for him. He's not actually good. He strikes out a bunch. And guess what? I was right. Listen to me more often, people.
Right. I like that passion because, I mean, Morel brings it every single day. My gosh. Smile on his face.
Are immaculate.
And that smile. I mean, we can just go on and on about how much love this podcast has for Christopher Morel. Maybe not as much as Jeff loves Michael Bush, who had a good week. But, I mean, I think he might be filing a restraining order here soon, Jeff.
He has to meet me first to actually get that restraining order. But don't worry, I'm coming.
I'll send your love when I see them in Seattle.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to ask you that later if you get to go to the games this weekend.
Yeah, I'll be at every one of them.
Awesome.
I'm going Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I would not ever miss my boys being in town. So I will be there. I will be there with bells on. I will be there with my Christopher Morel poncho, that like lined fleece poncho that I've made to stave off the April cool. And yeah, I'm very, very excited. And I hope they do well, and they should, because the Mariners haven't been very good so far this season.
Which is surprising. I mean, you look at that starting rotation, you're like, why is that not good?
Because they can't hit baseballs.
Yeah, that's gonna hurt you.
Yeah, that's
they
tough.
looked at Gold Glove winning, you know, Gold Glove caliber, played 162 games last year and loved every minute of it, Gino Suarez, and said, we'd really rather not pay him that and bring on Luis Urias to play third base instead. And like cross our fingers that he doesn't disintegrate like cotton candy in a rainstorm by
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. You know, I think there was Sean and I were advocating it early days of the podcast a whole 5 weeks ago. we were talking about just potential trade partners for the Cubs, and the Mariners and the Cubs just felt like a partner of destiny. Just the high end pitching that the Mariners had and some extra bats the Cubs had. I mean, there's still an opportunity at some point for potentially something to get done. But I really thought when they moved Eugenio, I thought that was going to be a precursor to, I'm so sorry for saying this, knowing how much you love Christopher Morel getting dealt. I thought there was.
No blame there. I have been saying, I do the Sun Ranto show with Danny Rocket and Michael Cotton, and I have been saying for like all off season and maybe even a little bit before that, I was like, you know, what would be a really great deal if like they traded Christopher Morel for like an Emerson Hancock straight up, you know, because like. Then the Mariners would have an infielder who knows what a bat looks like. And we would have a starting pitcher in our, you know, rotation of defunct and very, very old, blessed, beloved starting pitchers like Kyle Hendricks.
Oh, boy. My heart is breaking.
I know. Like, yeah. Here's the thing. Like, I love Hendo with my whole heart, and he is the last remaining member of our beautiful 2016 team, and I see the Hendo on your wall there.
My son is named after Kyle Hendricks as well. I'm like the violinist on the Titanic with this one.
Yeah,
like,
right?
I'm going down with the ship. Boat. I don't care.
And I said it online. Was it yesterday? And I stand by it. Like, I firmly believe that Kyle Hendricks should never throw a pitch in any other uniform.
No.
Yes, like, right. I don't care what you have to do. Give him a desk job somewhere and let him play with numbers or turn him into some kind of coach.
He loves numbers. He talks about them all the time.
Numbers. That would be great. I think it's... Turn him into some kind of coach. Let him be like a mentor. Just pay him to never pitch for anybody else just so that my heart will never have to break.
I think the thing that I struggle with Hendricks, and I'm trying to be reasonable and logical about his numbers while also like the fan heart takes over specifically for him more than any other player. Like it's three starts, and he has had seasons where he's started this way. So I'm not entirely discouraged. I'm not out with the pitchforks like a lot of other fans are. I know there's been a lot of association with him and where he's pitched in the rotation. Like he was the number two. I'm like, well, not really. These things are part of matchups and stuff. I had him in my brain as the five. Like he's a great five. Like he is a guy that's going to give you innings, hopefully. And he's going to, you know, surprise you with some really good starts. And then there's going to be ones you throw out. But the issue,
I had him in my head as a four, thinking that we just simply don't have a five. Like a five is we have a five by committee.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like we don't really have we sort of have ones that are like really good twos. Like it's just that's not a discount of Shota. It's just we like if you're thinking
no,
of, like,
no. I think I was hoping that Shota would be our three. Like that was my hope.
Yeah.
And that he would play his way out of being the three.
Yes.
But you know, I think Justin Steele is without a doubt our one. And you know, and that's great. If he plays what he did last year, then awesome. Perfect. Keep him as our one. Because I just like I don't see us going out. I don't see the Cubs going out and spending the money to get like a marquee
No pun intended.
a marquee starting pitcher, right? Like we're not paying the money for
that's a marquee. That's the closest thing you're gonna get.
Yeah.
They were like, we have a marquee at home, and our marquee at home doesn't.
I've been thinking about that for weeks of just in random podcast marketing and things, and thinking about Juan Soto next offseason and being like, we have a Juan Soto at home. And like the Juan Soto at home is Owen Casey, which is not a discount on Owen Casey. He's had a really hot start and he looks like a really good bat, but like Juan Soto is a generational talent. So like, right. It's just like, and you're worth $5.3 billion, like open the checkbook to go get a player that transforms this offense into something unreal. But
and the last time we had anything close to a generational talent, it,
went to Colorado. Yeah.
Depression. I like,
and is getting death threats.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, we spent Chris Bryant's entire career arguing about when he was going to get traded to somebody else.
Yes. Which is totally unfortunate.
That sucks. Like, it sucks that, like, one of the best players in raw talent to ever play for the team never got to feel comfortable as part of the team. Point in Chris Bryant's career was he ever just going to be here forever. And like the fan know that, and he know that, and the team know that, and just everybody know that, like, that's our guy. Like, when was the last time the Cubs had a guy who was like their guy? You know, when would, like, I think of like the Giants and Brandon Crawford, right? Or, you know, where like that's just their dude, and ride or die, he's their guy, and he never has to think about where he's going to be next season because he's going to stay right where he's at. And like, when was the last time
we're full circle already? It, like, it might be Kyle Hendricks. Like, that's like,
yeah, I think it might be Kyle.
Like, that's like, just staple him to the ivy. Like, don't let him go. I don't like that's it's so funny. I think in, you know, going into 2023, knowing like the capsular issue he had in his shoulder, which like there was just a weird understanding of that injury for me, just knowing he's not a velocity guy. So no, like that's right. A velocity injury usually, but apparently it just had a lot to do with just his repetition and how he strengthened the area, because never really needed to because of how his velocity was managed and how he's aged. Like, to get to the velocity he was at, he needed more velocity training, which is
right.
Kind of hilarious in a weird way, but like they never thought he was going to be a good pitcher again, and he was very serviceable last year, and I don't know if that was, you know, the end, or if this year, like, we all know the contract's done, and there was a lot of talk this offseason of like, well, if they're going to give him an extension, it's structured around a transition to the front office. And my first thought was like, awesome. It never, my thought was, oh, they know he's cooked, like, and they want him to have an option. And now I'm like, after these three starts and haters jumping all over me on the internet, like, I'm starting like, well, maybe they do know something, and they're like, please stay, just don't pitch. Like, it's like, right. how they're feeling.
Yeah, but, like, never go anywhere. Just sit there and look pretty. And yeah. Never like,
we'll,
wear.
We'll still
another
give you
uniform.
Chocolate milk
because
after
I
the
swear
game.
To God, if Kyle Hendricks ever put on like a Cardinals uniform, I would jump off a bridge.
Yeah, I'd throw up. Oh God,
I don't want to think about that.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's where my brain goes. I'm broken.
I think on that really disgusting note, it's time to talk about an update in the standings and the records in the NL Central. We have the Milwaukee Brewers starting out hot because everybody expected that with that roster at 8-3. The Pirates, another team everybody expected to be super good, are 9-4. Cubs right behind, 7-5. Cincinnati Reds living in the land of mediocrity of 6-6. And America's team, St. Louis Cardinals, 6-7.
Greatest fans in baseball.
Exactly.
Greatest fans in baseball.
Dear Cardinals _ live, thank you for coming on our show, but we will jump on the Cardinals whenever we can. We're sorry, sort of. So,
not even a little sorry.
You're getting to go to the games, IFG, this weekend. Well, let's talk about this, the next six games before our next recording. Cubs have three with the Seattle Mariners, who are off to a 5-8 start. which is not necessarily ideal, but, you know, we kind of briefly touched on the roster and the lack of offense. Cubs are going to be throwing Jordan Wicks on Friday versus Bryce Miller. We'll get hopefully an opportunity with the roof to see Shota Imanaga get deeper into a game versus Emerson Hancock on Saturday. And then Luis Castillo, a guy I didn't really understand why the Reds ever got rid of, versus the Ass Man on Sunday. So some pretty solid pitching matchups there. And it's a quick turnaround right off to Arizona to close out this West Coast trip. And they're off to a 6-7 start. Their bats started pretty slow. They're heating up. Corbin Carroll's been hitting the ball really hard in his last three games. We'll have Brown. I'm guessing Ben Brown's going to get another start here versus Merrill Kelly. And then Kyle Hendricks versus someone named Thomas Henry. I'll have to look into him. Don't know who that is.
Can't be Kyle.
And then we'll have Jordan Wicks again versus Fiat. P-F-A-A-D-T. I'm assuming that's, as I don't know how to say his name correctly.
Is it Pat?
I don't know. Fat? All I can think of is like.
Is it a silent J, like yogging?
Like yogging. I don't know. It's a new fad. Everybody's doing it. But it's the pancake breakfast. We do it every Sunday. I think this is a really good stretch for the Cubs. Neither of these teams are world beating offensively until they face Kyle Hendricks. I'm just kidding.
Isn't Kyle on the IL?
Kyle Hendricks? Did they just put him on the IL?
I think he's on the 15-day as of right now.
Really?
Did not see that. Breaking news on
I did see Quas got sent down to Iowa just now.
Yeah,
I didn't see that.
So we're
He's been placed on the injured list with shoulder inflammation. So
interesting.
That's
okay.
Where we're at, I don't want to catastrophize too much. Like, he always kind of starts off the season slow, just like he always starts off every outing a little bit slow, like, you know, the Kyle Hendricks first inning, but gosh, it's scary.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting too, like, looking under the hood, I've looked at the just like some of his pitch movement, because I thought maybe there was a little bit of like some concern and a lack of horizontal or vertical movement, and there's nothing that like really jumps out. Like, he is actually averaging a little bit more horizontal movement on the sinker and the changeup than he was last year, and is more at kind of his career norms in that perspective. And he's actually getting a little more drop on the change. So my thoughts early on was just looking at these numbers, like, well, I guess his command then, maybe he's getting a little more drop. And it's been very interesting, specifically with some of the Cubs that have struggled in the pitching staff, that has been a really common theme with more horizontal movement than last year, but just poor location. And that's why I'm like, well, are you not aware that your pitch breaks more than it used to? And you're trying to ebb and flow? Because we saw a very solid day after adjustment from Adbert Alzolay, specifically versus Fernando Tatis. He had thrown that slider that just hung over the corner of the plate, and he hit it into the eclipse. And then the very next day, he struck him out on the same pitch because it dropped more. And then he had a little bit of higher velocity on it. And I don't know if he just had a little more confidence in throwing it that way, and he was just trying too hard to throw it as a strike. Not sure what shifts specifically in the data there. But yeah, it's just been very interesting. The guys that have been off have been seeing significant more movement, and that has been turning into walks. And you're hoping it's like a delivery issue or something else, but I feel like these are numbers they probably were seeing in the spring as well and should have been adjusting to these things. So definitely going to keep an eye on, and now that Kyle Hendricks is hurt, I was going to keep an eye on that for a few more starts to see if this was like some sort of anomaly or a sign of maybe overthrowing and the beginning of a regression. But if there is truly a shoulder issue, and not trying to be that speculative reporter, but you know, I think this does give them an opportunity to reevaluate and let Kyle work on some things and in a window, And then when Jameson Taillon is done with his rehab, there is actually a potential of them being able to call him up early and have him as like a swingman for like two rotations, mm-hmm. like than doing with Ben Brown, and like really just having him face major league hitters out of that pen. And because I think that's the worry, I guess, with a guy with Hendricks. Like you're not optioning him. Like he's either in this rotation or he's not in the rotation, because that just doesn't play in the bullpen. He's not giving you length out there. It's just either he's starting or he's done. Like that's what it is. There's no middle ground, which is what's so challenging.
And even then, I don't see a situation where they're going to, you know, DFA him or anything like that. It just doesn't seem like something that this front office would do. I mean, I know he had a bigger contract, but we saw that same front office hold on to Jason Hayward as long as they did. So I don't see that taking place.
Let's see what player, happens,
but yeah.
Legendary Cub Eric Hosmer, this front office held on to.
Oh.
They respect him.
No, you gotta put a dollar in the jar.
Yeah. Sorry, hold
that's
on.
That's a rule. That's a rule on the Sun Ranto show. If you bring up Eric Hosmer, put a dollar in the jar.
You know, actually, rumor has it that even when you mention his name, a ball somewhere gets hit into the ground at 94 miles per hour. Exactly. It's unbelievable.
Let's just say he's still swinging to this day. Okay, so crazy idea. Okay. We have Justin Steele, who's out for God knows how long. We have Jameson Taillon, who's out for God knows how long. We have Kyle Hendricks, who's out for God knows how long. What if, as like a personal favor to me, say, the Cubs just went out and like just cheekily, just for fun, gave Rich Hill a contract?
Oh God! I thought you were gonna say Trevor Bauer. I'm like, okay, no, I'm all on. I'm on the Dick Mountain train. Like there's a different type of mountain and Dick involved with Trevor Bauer. He's just a mountain of never. Actually, you know, I think that's not a terrible idea. I mean, he has been serviceable at what he has had as recently as last year. I believe he was in the Pirates last year.
He was.
I think I saw something. It was towards the end of spring training where it might have been like Ken Rosenthal or Jeff Passan. They're like, hey, Rich Hill's in the airport. And like he was seen somewhere by like the Red Sox facility. And he was just like, no, I'm just getting on a plane. And he was like really annoyed by it. But I mean, if he can still spin it and give you four innings,
we're really entering
a dangerous area with this pitching staff. Like
I'm not ready to say my final goodbyes to the last remaining member of the 2008 Chicago Cubs. And I think he deserves one.
They're not dead. They're just
no, but they're all retired, except
yes, that's true.
Rich Hill, who is not retired. He just doesn't have a contract right now. And he should, again, as a personal favor to me, if nothing else, play somewhere this season. Now, he could, again, as a personal favor to me, come play in Seattle, and I think that would at least meet, if not break, the record for the greatest number of major league teams that a single player has played on. Or he could end his career where he began it, right here with us in Chicago.
Sure.
And I think that would be fun.
I remember when he was on the team, and the first time I saw that guy's curveball, I'm like, this is the guy. This is it.
Yeah.
I was all aboard like this and just never
dropping
understood
it,
why
that hammer.
It never turned into like this elite pitcher. He was a good pitcher and just I loved watching that guy pitch. And yeah, I don't even remember how his tenure with the Cubs ended. Like, was he just a free agent and they just didn't sign him? Is it really that simple?
He was a baby, so
I know he had some
injuries. Well, I mean, issues. Like he was a really old baby, but yeah. He was still a baby. Let me see here. He
like a
was with
normal
us.
Baby for 2008, but like now the babies like Jackson Churio who are like 20.
Right. Yeah. He was 28 in 2008. He debuted at 25 in 2005. And then he went from us to Baltimore.
I remember that.
But that must have been like an off-season trade or something.
Did he go with Sammy? No, Sammy was earlier than that. That was I can't remember when the Sosa era ended. It had to be like 2004, 2005. Man, we send a lot of stuff to Baltimore. Thank you for joining us.
We get a lot of good from Baltimore.
Yeah, exactly. We got two nearly Cy Young award seasons from Jake Arrieta, and then a really uncomfortable like disintegration of his public appeal, and one really terrible start in Milwaukee that destroyed the Cubs World Series roster. So, you know, like, we'll give and take while we got there.
It says God gives and God taketh away.
Exactly.
At least we'll always have the body issue.
Yeah. So I think one thing that we generally do after this segment, once we've looked at what's coming, we'll take a step back and kind of talk about some things, you know, dig through the ivy and find the bricks. And something Sean and I were talking about this week in some personal messages back and forth is the discipline and the on-base percentage early on for this offense. I think when going into this season, the questions were about slugging, and Christopher Morel has been the answer. Maybe that should be his nickname. Maybe we should just call him the answer now on. I like it. I'm good with it. We'll move on. But he's been such a nice addition to the lineup behind Bellinger. Bellinger has not been off to a torrid start. His at-bats aren't something that I'm sitting here worried about. He's making pretty solid contact, and he is not striking out. There's still the good two-strike approach. It'll come, but like, it has been nice to see guys pitching around Bellinger and just getting punished by Morel.
Delightful.
And you know, I think it is important to bear in mind that Cody is kind of still finishing up his spring training right now, right?
Like, yes,
he got
correct.
Off to a little That's bit a of great a late note. Start.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not throwing him out the window or anything at this point. And I think Cody will be fine. Or he correct. Won't, and he'll be fun. Like, who cares?
Yes.
Either way, we got him, and nobody else did, and that's what y'all wanted, right?
Yes, yes, that's exactly,
absolutely,
for sure, yes.
We were on that train I think it was like our first episode. We were sitting, and we had talked about the title of the episode was the off season, and we just kind of went back and forth of like, it's been fine, but there's so many guys out there, specifically Cody Bellinger, that just changes the narrative entirely of what the season can be. And if it doesn't happen, then we need to have a very serious conversation. It ended up happening, but yeah, he's
right.
The linchpin.
And you know, like I was kind of, I don't want to say I was lukewarm about the situation, but I remember like trying to just reel people back in a little bit. I'm like, you know, Cody is not going to be the answer to all of your thoughts and prayers, because signing Cody Bellinger is a lateral move. We had Cody Bellinger last year. And now we have Cody Bellinger this year, and that is the same. That's not better. That's the same. At best, if he performs as well as he did last year, which we were all a little bit surprised about, let's be honest. And if
honestly,
he does that again.
I was not. I've been on the Cody Bellinger redemption tour train for like 2 years, and I know I'm alone on that one. I always loved the swing. When Cody Bellinger is good, it's good for baseball. He's a fun player to watch taking that bat. And like, as soon as I heard that there was a potential he's getting DFA'd, I'm like, Cubs are going to get him, and the guy's going to rebound, and this is going to be amazing. And
he did, and that was fun. But we do, you know, like, it was the Dodgers who annoyingly seem to have this ability to make people who can't perform. Let's say Jason Hayward, Casper Hernandez, anybody that you don't want, the Dodgers are going to pick them up and then make them annoyingly good specifically against you. I don't know how they do it. It's devil magic. They can't be trusted. I forgot where I was going with this. Anyway, Cody Bellinger, yay. I think he's going to be fine. I think he needs a little bit more time to warm up. He's been, you know, sitting on ice for a little bit too long. And I think it's going to be fine. And I love the fact that Christopher Morel is putting the fear of God into whatever is left of people's pitching staffs all over MLB.
Yeah, that chase rate has been such a nice surprise.
Delightful.
Yeah, and his walk rate has been climbing too, like just a little bit. And his at bats are really fun to watch, just like Cody's. He really fights in there, and when he gets his pitch, he's not really missing it. And when it's not hit out of the park, it's hit really hard somewhere.
Yeah,
his average exit velocity is still extremely high. And we're getting into a pretty decent sample size. We're exiting, as we like to say, the small sample size alert on here.
Right.
We're going to be next week. The 10% of the season will be done. We'll be 16 games in, and we'll have 90% of the season to go. But 10% is enough to start talking about some of the trends. Maybe not necessarily for the pitchers, but definitely for the hitters, especially the ones that start. It's enough of a plate sample size to see where they're going and what they could possibly do. And yeah, it's been a nice surprise up and down this lineup to see guys, you know, taking long at bats, taking walks. You know, I think that has been, it was on Parkinson Spiegel the other day here in Chicago. They had Nico Horner on, and it's been noticeable that he's taken a ton more walks, and, you know, the hits haven't necessarily been falling for him. And he talked about just like a team-wide approach of the idea of getting on base. And yeah, I think these are a lot of the weird minutiae that I've been just flagging and writing notes here and there of, like, that I'm referring to as the Craig Council effect. Like, he seems to push against the brass, and he seems to push against the status quo. There's a lot of comments about that this offseason. Like, Jed Hoyer even made, like, kind of an off-color comment of, like, he's afraid to call Craig because, like, he's always challenging him on something. Which,
I love that.
Yeah, where, like, when he
calls Beta. As it should be.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. I know it's sacrilege, but I've been a huge Craig Council, the manager, fan
Same.
For quite a long time. I was saying back in like 2019, I think I've got tweets out there where it's like, hey, what if we like snuck into Brewers camp in the middle of the night and just like stole Craig and like left Joe Madden there? Just for fun.
Like bag overhead, like bag
yeah,
overhead.
Exactly. Bag overhead, just pull them away.
Just get them the Joe Madden glasses.
And just
see
be
if
like,
anyone
hey,
notices. Just and you know, it's interesting too, because Jake McKibben, over from Brewer Fanatic, friend of the pod, we had him on for the Brewers preview episode. And that was one of the questions that we had asked him is, all right, well, now Craig Council's gone. You've lost your GM. In Stearns, you've lost Craig Council. Like, what is it about the Brewers? What are they doing game plan wise, development wise, that these guys, these pitchers, like just come up and they're just really good in whatever the specific thing they do, and that's enough, like, to create this roster? And yes, it's very early in the season, but it seems like it's still there, which like makes me feel like it's not just Craig. Or based on some of the things I've read at The Athletic from Sahadev and Patrick this offseason, like, Craig's fingers are everywhere in this organization. Like, they, like, would come into the office and they found him, like, in a sweatshirt, like breaking down the IV computer. Like, and they're like, oh, what are you doing here? And he had, like, gotten his own login from the IT guy and was like, yeah, you're thinking about these seven things wrong. Like, and just was like, and then they changed it. And that's, I'm like, maybe it's going to take some time for the Brewers start kind of disintegrating, because like the things that he touches are not like short-term things. They're like organizational philosophy things that like we're going to see the dividends hopefully. But like, I think it's, oh man, I don't even want to bring up this point from an old pop, but like, it has to be said, like the fear of the Craig Council, like budget philosophy of like, all right, well now we can spend less because Craig Council extracts more. Like, I think that's the biggest.
I hate
of
you
every
keep on bringing that up.
Yeah, but it is. It's dangling
wrong,
out there.
Though. That is the way they think. That is the way the Cubs front office is thinking. It is definitely the way that Jed Hoyer is thinking. It's totally in line with what he has been saying all offseason. You know, he's like, hey, look at how the Diamondbacks lost the World Series because they had a budget of $12 and a piece of chewed bubble gum. And we should do that because what is more fun than losing a World Series to a team that spends more money?
Being the Rays, like he said over and over again, look at the Rays model. I mean, they won 99 games, but you know.
But like
it's
like
so, it's
why
so fun to be a fan of the Tampa Bay Rays, as you can tell by all the people who show up to support them.
Yeah, I think they play a very specific brand of baseball that I don't think would be fun to watch 162 times. I grew up in Tampa.
It's not fun to watch.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've watched enough Rays games, like, during periods like the rebuild when the Cubs were really bad, and during periods of, you know, like 2017 and 2019, like during parts that fall apart, you know, you just turn some games on, and I was always interested in what they were doing over there. And yeah, that's just like the opener thing and the constant pitching changes before the rule changes, and like just completely different lineups and just no attachment to any human being there, but like winning a ton of baseball games because of how they played the odds. And I think we saw that just kind of like the overthinking and the overmanagement and like a small sample size with the Blake Snell decision in the World Series versus the Dodgers. The guy was rolling. Like, I understand, like, he was rolling. I would have left him out there. Like 100% would have left him out there.
Like, growing up at Tropicana Field watching Rays baseball, when Joe Maddon took our team to the World Series, I 1000% convinced we were going to lose. Game 7, he's going to bullpen manage us completely out of this game. I've seen it happen. He's already done it.
He tried his hardest to do that in 2016, but like Trevor Bauer played with a drone and they didn't have an extra starter, so the Cubs won that World Series. Like, I'm gonna say that out loud. Like, it's like that's like, Joe Maddon did not win that World Series. Terry Francona ran out of bullets. Like, that's
we won that series in spite of Joe Madden's management, and you can hoist me by my own petard over it all you want. But I will die believing that.
No, this is not a lonely camp anymore. Like, I've thought about that, and I had some friends, you know, coworkers at the time that were from the Cleveland area, huge now Guardians fans, and like they were just destroyed. And I was looking just through that postseason, like, they just ran through that formula, and the Cubs got to see every one of their elite bullpen guys on a little less rest, like probably one more time than they should have. And that was the difference. That was everything. It was. And it was because they didn't have another starter. Like, it was, and it's just, they don't get the Kluber if they had, like, they saw him twice and couldn't hit him. If they saw him a third time, they could. Like, that is, it's the third time through the lineup philosophy.
Yep.
Like, it's not, oh man, but like, let's not go down that road. So yeah, going back to the original point, like, the on-base percentage for this team is very high. Ian Happ at the top of the lineup with the on-base streak, awesome. And it's hard not to immediately think of the 2016 team and the Dexter Fowler when you go, we go. And it definitely feels like that approach is so far kind of just cascading through the lineup. And that has been nice to see a team that is clicking this way offensively. And it is,
I mean, it's fun to see Seiya Suzuki doing the damn thing. That dude is, I mean, I'm a huge fan. I remember, I think the first time I like really paid attention to Seiya Suzuki was in the 2019 Premier 12. It's an international tournament that happens like on the off years between World Baseball Classics. And I was like, who the hell is this guy? Like, I don't know who that guy, we gotta get that guy. that is, I want that on my team. And like, now we have that on our team. And not only do we have it on our team, but like, he's playing up to that too. And that is
night day different. A
delight.
That's the benching or the rest last year. Since then, just like the guy that I thought they signed, like, I knew there was going to be the cultural adjustment, the U.S. and to the pitching and the schedule. And then like, he came out and just like buzzard luck on that injury, like the start last year, just like looked like he was ready to go, and then got that. I can't remember the injury, the specific oblique body. Oblique.
Took him out of the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah. Just
to, all like, of his friends got to win without him. Like, he's like, weird... whatever that, I'm like, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah. The weird, like the when the White Sox did it with Eloy when they put the jersey in the dugout, they did that with him too. And it's like, he's not, he didn't die. He's just not here.
Yeah. He's not here. He's missing it. He's hurt.
Yeah. Like that's, yeah. I just thought that's such a weird homage to a teammate. It's like, it'd be like putting like a black thing on your arm for a guy who got like tore his Achilles. Like that's like, no, he's coming back. He's not dead. But
no.
Yeah. It's been nice to see. Like, I think you look at the top of the Cubs lineup with, you know, Saya, Belly, Morel, and the way that they're playing, like, that is the slug, that is the feared batters that you hope this offense would have, and they've had it. And, you know, as much as we've slammed the front office at times, like, credit to Jed on holding on to this chip and Morel, and, you know, giving the money to Saya Suzuki, and kind of seeing potentially the potential there, and
Yeah,
getting Bellinger back here, and it is a stopgap for, you know, other options they want to try in center field. But while he's here, we'll, you know, enjoy watching him play and stare weirdly high into the mist between innings. And yeah, well, it'll be nice to see. And yeah, it's just the vibes of the 2016 offense is there. It's just, yeah, I think the pitching depth is being very challenged very early. And I would have argued a few weeks ago that there was no necessary need for like a Jordan Montgomery. It was definitely a want. And now it's just like, well, there was pitching out there that could have covered
available.
Innings.
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah.
And
Michael
still like,
Lorenzen even.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's like, just major league quality pitching out there for the price of money, which was always supposed to be like the Theo Epstein school of thought of like using actual liquid capital versus player capital to acquire a player was the preferred method. And that,
right. I mean, at the time, like you didn't have a whole lot of player capital that you wanted to get rid of.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
We are there right now. We're kind of more at a place where like, there's a whole lot of player capital that like nobody wants. So, you know, it's only money, like buy the guy with beer bats, figure it out. do y'all think about Shota though?
Oh, yeah, I think that's a good transition.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, I think
what a delightful human being. He showed up and he's like, I have decided I live in Chicago now. I am going to become more Chicago than a deep dish pizza.
Yeah, it's true. And he's actually he's so Chicago, he might even be like a thin crust tavern pizza.
Exactly.
Like he'll be back, don't worry. He pops on it up. but yeah, Shota is I think they did him a service by having him start that first game at Wrigley. So he can, you know, play around with that high fastball. And he got, and I'm sure they know more than I would know that, you know, that he would have a second start when it was still probably cold at Wrigley when he got that Dodgers. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, this is a guy that's going to adjust to the league. And even in that start, he took down Shohei, obviously, which was a really cool moment. And he has looked very, very good. And his fastball was, you know, just has enough velocity and weird movement at the top of the zone. And he was pushing it even in that start versus the Dodgers. And like, to me, I think that is a nice reflection of like how good he can be this year, because that Dodger lineup is relentless. It is relentless, which is another reason why I was so impressed with Jordan Wicks that weekend. And his 14 whiffs, like, yeah, he only threw 4.2 innings and he really had the work. But like, that is a lineup that like you can go back to the dugout with 7 Ks and 4 hits and 4.2 innings and go, yeah, that was a good day. Like that is not there are no breaks. There are no breaks. It's no breaks, all gas. They're all the way down, up and down. Not Yan Gomes gas money, like actual gas money, just all the way through.
And Shota still hasn't given up a run, has he?
No. Nope. Word.
Just keep it up. It's like 162 more games. It's fine.
Exactly. That futures bet I have on him winning Rookie of the Year is looking pretty damn good. But yeah, I think he's exactly what this rotation so far is. When Sean and I discussed, was he is exactly, you know, what they needed at the top of the rotation. he is swing and miss, which we haven't had swing and miss on the rotation as much as we would like. And we also just like need a guy that can eat some innings, which I'm hoping as he transitions, that's going to be like something he can do, because as much as Marcus Stroman was hurt the 2 years he was on the Cubs, he still averaged 140 innings, and that's 140 innings they needed to replace. And
yeah,
that number is getting feeling larger and larger as more starters go down in this rotation.
You sound just mad. Okay, but there are good things, because he hasn't given up a run yet. He led, I believe, if not the Central League, then all of NPB last year in strikeouts. The dude is good at hurling that rock. And I'm glad that he's doing it for us. He's a lot of fun. You know, he wasn't the showiest NPB posting, and he certainly didn't take in the most money. But he is a legitimately like really good pitcher, and he seems to really want to be a Cub, and that I appreciate. I always say I believe in both the science and religion of baseball, and I think player vibe is so important to team success.
Yes.
Yeah, I love the fiery competitiveness he showed on the mound. And I like to toot my own horn on this podcast, but we did a little preview. did a little preview of Shota, and I said, you know, all the talk about him being a ceiling as a 4 or 5, and then the floor being a middle reliever was ridiculous. And I go, this by the end of this year, this guy is going to be a legit 2 or 3 on this team. I mean, he has such that unique fastball, working in the top of the zone. And I said, as long as we just, you know, pitch him when the wind's blowing in, I think we should be fine. I mean, let's just work on that and make that happen. And then he won't give up a run, honestly, because I mean, they just that contact is why sometimes it's tough and pretty strong, but he just seemed to keep it in the ballpark. And I hope they keep up that trend, because man, he is just such a fun watch.
Yeah, they had talked about too, and his numbers in the MPB, like, and they had, when they were interviewing him, apparently on the free agent side, that he had said some of his home run rate was just attributed to he just refused to walk people. Like he threw a
Philly, which I love like, even more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Don't like, walk people ever. Exactly.
Yeah, and that's I'm like, well, then to me, like, that's like a pitch location or maybe a sequency adjustment. This isn't a guy that's like getting hit hard. His numbers were great, even with all the home runs. This is a guy that just refuses to put a man on base for free.
Totally. And he's, you know, you're definitely going to have loud outs with him.
Yes.
But like Yokohama Stadium, just there is a part of Yokohama Stadium that is just really easy to get the ball out. And if that's where you're doing half of your pitching, then you're going to run into that problem. It's like the short porch in Yankee Stadium or something.
Oh, wow.
We need to add for Shota starts. We need to find like the ballpark factor adjustment graph that exists where it shows how many ballparks it would have been out of.
Yeah.
Get all the MPB ballparks in there. So we can, you know, we could just start having discussions about whether or not that would have been a home run in last year's numbers as well.
I think we
need that. And then like we can add national parks so we can pay homage to Major League Two when they tell Rick Vaughn his home run wouldn't have been out at Yellowstone, which is
this would have been a home run at the Polo Grounds.
So I think it is time for Pick to Click. Welcome to Northside Baseball's Pick to Click, a weekly segment in which Sean and myself and this week's special guest IFG will pick a player or pitcher, hitter or pitcher, on the Chicago Cubs that we think, based on their matchups this week, are going to perform really well. And we'll go around. I will start. IFG as our guest, you'll go second. And Sean, you'll go third on our players that we think will click. And the player that I am going to go with is, once again, ride the hot hand, Mr. Michael Busch. It has a lot to do with the Cubs are facing a lot of righties in the next few days. in indoor ballparks. So we're not going to see rainouts. We're not going to see weather adjustment. This is also a guy who's going to see some pitchers in Arizona that he's actually seen before when he had a small cup of coffee with the Dodgers. And his approach is as advertised. He's really attacking that high fastball, still seeing a ton of fastballs. So I really think he's going to continue to kind of take that next step offensively and be at least, you know, major league average baseball player at first base, which is something the Cubs did not have last year. So I'm going to go with Mr. Michael Busch from the left side of the plate. IFG, what are you thinking for the week?
Well, first of all, I just want to appreciate your selection of Michael Busch, because you cannot imagine looking at the Dodgers lineup. Can you imagine like trying to fight your way through that to become a major league baseball player?
Dude, yeah, like he's Freddie Freeman. Was, no,
yeah, I've seen somebody so cock blocked in all of baseball history. And he's like, oh my gosh, I get to be a Cub. You mean I really get to play? Yeah, I'm gonna play the real baseball game. Let's do that. The best I've ever done. So they never ever send me anywhere else.
I don't like
the kind of guy that would be like, gee willikers, this is swell.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a real Smalls energy from Sandlot, where he's like got the hat doesn't like, hold on, this is the love of my life, so let's not hurt him too much. You know how much I don't like my Bush heavy or light. I love my Bush Michael. But yeah, he's got that. Oh, gee, mister, you think I could play? Like that. Yeah. And that's my pick to click.
I love it. I want to keep riding the Christopher Morel train. Woo woo. And I hope that he murders some baseballs right before my very eyes. I'm very much looking forward to that. I want Shota to keep up his runless streak as much as he can, for as long as he can. As if I'm in the park, he can go ahead and just hit a no-hitter, and I can let the entire city of Seattle be mad at me for forever. I don't care. Oh. Bring it. Yeah, so those are my picks. Christopher Morel, Shota Imanaga, please. Thank you.
All right. I'm going against the grain a little bit this week because, you know, I picked Seiya last week, so might as well just try to up the ante here. I'm actually going Nico Hoerner. Saw a couple of things. You know, his high walk rate, you know, that looks good. He's starting to hit the ball the other way a little bit. It seemed like he was a little pull heavy and missing some really good pitches in the middle of the zone right before he got that sit down to think about things. He seemed to be putting the ball the other way. I think we're just going to see a Nico type stretch. We're going to see him hitting the ball the other way, getting on base, stealing some bags and putting together some, good at bat. So Nico Hoerner, you're my pick to click.
Awesome. And that has been once again another Northside Baseball pick to click. Join us next week to see if our picks did click. Mine clicked last week. I'm the best. And
no, mine did too.
Yeah, tune in next week for another pick to click. All right, so IFG, you spent part of 2020 picking up Taiwanese baseball. You have followed baseball overseas for a number of years. Are there any players that are standouts, favorites of yours? I know Kosuke Fukudome is one that I know that you have a lot of affinity to. You're wearing his jersey for those who are watching, which, like, I encourage you to watch the YouTube of this podcast so you can see all of our cool backgrounds and her cool jersey. There we go. See? Right now, if you're listening right now, you could have saw the jersey, but you didn't because you're not watching. Watch the YouTube. All right. So, anywho, are there any other players that you think this year in the different leagues that Cub fans should start paying attention to that are going to start coming up besides, you know, some of the obvious like the Roki Sasaki and I can't think of the third baseman's name that was in the World Baseball Classic that is
Munetaka Murakami.
That's it. Yes. Are there any others that are kind of worth noting at this point?
Yeah. Tons. Oh, gosh, so many people. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Let's sort of start at the like Cubs level and work our way around. If you're wanting to get into watching baseball overseas and you are already a Cubs fan, which I assume you are if you're listening to this podcast, a good place
we accept
to start
all fans, but yeah, like Cub fans are preferred.
Yeah, but if you are a Cubs fan and you're interested in watching baseball overseas, a really good way to anchor yourself is to find a Cub that you like that's overseas. That's kind of how I got started watching overseas baseball. Kosuke, he's my favorite. He went back to Japan, and I just sort of chased him over there. And, you know, it's really hard to watch NPB baseball in 2014. And that's just kind of how it goes. So I was reading a lot of box scores and stuff. But it's a lot easier now. You don't have to be like me. You can actually watch baseball games. So... let's see. There are Cubs out there right now. We sort of traded with the Yokohama Bay Stars a little bit. We got Shota Imanaga, who was like their number two pitcher last year. And Rowan Wick is over there right now with the Yokohama Bay Stars. I'm in the middle of like a little merch transaction with a Bay Stars fan over there who's a big Imanaga fan. Who's buying an Imanaga Cubs jersey, and then I bought a Rowan Wick towel. These are towels, by the way. You can see. These are rally towels. You bring these to the ballpark, and then you can hold them up and wiggle them around, and you don't have to, like, make your own little cardboard sign to tell your favorite player that you love them. You can just buy a towel with their name on it.
That's really amazing. Cool. Is that a very common thing in the baseball overseas? Is that like how they show their support for different players?
Absolutely. So this one here that I'm holding up, it shows number 11, the catcher Lin Hong Yu from the Rakuten Monkeys of the CPBL. I have Goyen Wen up there, who was a Reds prospect back in the day. Other CPBL players who used to be in the Cubs system. We've got Chen Hong Wen, who is a pitcher with the Monkeys right now. And let's see if I can remember how Pat Hughes used to say his name. Jen Ho Sang.
I thought that is how you pronounce his name because of Pat Hughes. And I'm like thinking how you said it. I was like, that's probably correct, but I think we're thinking of the same person.
that is probably what his little paper said to say.
The Americanized way of saying the name.
Catfish. We can just call him Catfish. So Catfish is pitching for the Rakuten Monkeys as well. It's a lot of fun. He is currently, as far as I'm aware, the only player in the CPBL who has a major league RBI.
Oh, and that's really cool.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, I believe he batted in a run in one of his starts. He had a spot start on one of the Madden Cub teams, and he had a sacrifice bunt, I believe.
He sure did.
Yes, I do recall that. I actually was very excited when he got called up because I'd heard a lot about his changeup in that system for a really long time. And I don't know, because of Kyle Hendricks, I think about the changeup very differently. So any guy that's like, oh, he's got a great changeup. I was like, oh, is it Kyle Hendricks great? And then I saw it. I was like, no, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's not Kyle's, but it's not bad. And I remember like tuning into his start specifically. And I think he played some high powered offense. Might have been like Philly and like had like four like shutout innings in his debut and like looked pretty good, like for just having to come up and pitch back when the Cubs were doing that late in the year and kind of covering some injuries. But yeah, glad he found a place to land. I think that is definitely a good way to like get into weird sports, is like following players you like from something somewhere else. Like that's
absolutely
not baseball related, but I've followed a lot of my alma mater Valparaiso, their basketball players overseas, so I have watched a weird amount of EuroLeague basketball in my life, so like just continue to support these guys I saw when I was on campus. And that's actually really cool. So, like, the towel thing, the question I have about is, so are the players aware, are there, like, special colors for different players so that, like, they're more aware of, like, you have their towel because if people are, like, waving it, or is there just kind of, like, a team-centric color and, like, the name on it is, like, you know what the name is on it. It's not something the players can recognize on the field.
Yeah, it's a great question. There are so many different kinds. So I can show you, I usually keep them up on the wall, but there are... let's see. Where's my other one? Yashin, where are you? There you are. So, like, just as far as the Monkeys go, I got both of these towels in 2020. And so this one here, that is Lin Hong Yu, and that just has his name on it, right? That right there, just his name, Lin Hong Yu.
For those who are listening, we have a scarlet and gold towel with Japanese characters. Chinese characters across with an image of a player. Yeah. You two can own one.
And this is Yang Yaoshun, who used to be a Pirates prospect like 10 years ago. Kind of had a bum shoulder, didn't make it to the major leagues, but he's a delight, absolute delight. Such a fun dude. This dude will swing at literally anything, but it's okay because
Javier Baez.
I was gonna say, is that Chinese for Javier Baez?
Yeah.
Yes. I have, dude, like, I literally have seen this dude throw his bat into oncoming pitch and it would landed for a hit. I love this man. So this is Yang Yaoshun. He is now currently playing semi-pro baseball in Taiwan because he's like 43 or something now. But yes, wow. Delightful. Love him. And so this is a big thing. I cyberbullied the monkeys into making this towel for me. They had not planned on it. So I'm them.
That is so cool.
So yeah, and then we have, you know, like this one up here is Roki Sasaki. And then this one up here, if you look way up in the corner of my room, oh, where are you? Go Yan Wen up there, former Reds international prospect. But this one here is from the 2019 Premier 12. That is Team Chinese Taipei. That's Team Taiwan's like team thing. And I got that signed. That's signed by a few players. This here is a banner for the Yakult Swallows. This one here is the Yomiuri Giants from Japan. So there are lots of different things. Sometimes they are team towels.
Okay.
And sometimes they're player towels. And they're all delightful. I have my friend over in Japan is sending me a Rowan Wick towel from the Yokohama Bay Stars. I'm going to see if I can try to find something from Franmil Reyes, too, because he's currently with the Nippon Fighters, which is Shohei Ohtani's former team.
Yeah.
So Franmil is over there. He's already hit his first home run. That's very exciting. There are some great players on the Fighters, by the way. Do you remember, you guys have been around for a little bit, do you remember...
What an old joke?
Yeah, that's how I have hold on.
Wow.
I guarantee neither of you are older than me. It's fine. So, do you remember
the 21st night of September?
Tsuyoshi Shinjo from the Mets.
Yes.
Does that name sound at all familiar?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Tsuyoshi Shinjo is now the manager of the Nippenham Fighters. This dude is so extra, it's ridiculous. Like, season before last,
was he an infielder or was he the relief pitcher? Outfielder. Okay, I'm thinking of Shinjo Tatsu, the closer for the White Sox, the short.
No, Shinjo is like as extra as they come. His first year as manager for the Nippenham Fighters, he literally like flew into the home opener on a whole fucking hovercraft.
What?
Because wouldn't you? He had his name officially registered in the NPB register as Big Boss.
Jesus.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
He's like the meta world piece of NPB.
He's
baseball.
Amazing.
Oh, I love that.
As far as, but like for players, the Fighters are also really great to watch for players. So, the Fighters now are a Pacific League team. Pacifically, there are two baseball leagues in NPB. There's the Central League where the Dragons and the Yakult Swallows play, and the Yomiuri Giants. And the Central League is kind of like, welcome to baseball, set your clock back 35 years, we don't do streaming.
Oh, wow.
Which is so hard. But the Pacific League is like, hey, what if you gave us money and we let you watch baseball? And so that's a lot of fun.
That's a nice exchange.
Even better,
yeah.
Because the Pacific League has allowed a group of people to do on a delay. So it's like happening during our awake time. I have to wake up at like 3 a.m. to watch baseball. Y'all don't have to do that. You can go to Pacific League TV on YouTube, and they have on delay Pacific League baseball games with English commentary overlay.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's cool.
So that is a really good way if you just want to like sort of dip your feet into watching baseball. From Japan, highly recommend the Nippon Fighters. They're a lot of fun. Do they win all the time? Not really. Do they have Chusei Minami, who is just a blast? Yes. Watch Chusei play baseball. He's fun. Watch, let's see. Gosh, who is, you've got the SoftBank Hawks are a Pacific League baseball team. So like, if you want like your Yankees, your Giants, like your Yankees and your Dodgers, like your guys that have a whole lot of money. So they have a whole lot of resources to put into training. So their baseball players are like good or whatever. Then you're looking at the SoftBank Hawks and the Yomiuri Giants. So go ahead and watch the SoftBank Hawks. They've got Kensuke Kondo. Kensuke Kondo used to be a fighter. Now he's a SoftBank Hawk. And he's so great. He's so good. He's so fun. Just a delightful person who knows how to put the bat on the ball. And these are things you can watch them for free. You just go on Pacific League TV and you can just pick any game. You just watch them and they have the English commentary and it's great.
I love
it. If I heard you correctly, you can get Bricks Behind the Ivy and NPP or Pacific League Baseball for free, both on YouTube. As simple as just going on YouTube, searching those two things and subscribing to both of them.
Yeah. Pacific League TV.
What if Bricks you don't subscribe to Bricks Behind the Ivy, then you can't get the other baseball. That's what I've heard. You don't want to gamble there. You should probably
allegedly.
Come to our page.
I think allegedly. You should probably try it anyway. But
yeah.
You need to do both. And then when you're at it, go ahead and look up the Wei Chun Dragons. Go ahead and look up the Taiwan Steel Group Hawks, which is a brand new expansion team in the CPBL, which has saved my sanity by giving us a 6-team league instead of a 5-team one where the schedule was mind-numbing. Now we can just like watch 3 games a night because there's 6 teams, so everybody gets to play instead of like everybody always there being a team that has a bye day. that was wild for a few years where the CPBL had 5 teams.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's
even
weird.
Even numbers, please. Leagues. If you are a baseball league, please have even numbers.
Yeah, that's like a community softball league. It's like nope, you don't play take the beer home, guys. You don't play this weekend.
But yeah, no, it's and I know I get like over exaggerated and I'm not being very clear in what I'm saying, but my point is if we're gonna circle back around to a point, there is so much fun baseball out there, and a lot of it is really accessible for free. And then if you want more of that, there are ways where you can like give somebody money and they'll give you even more baseball. And that is a lot of fun. I love baseball in all of its shapes and sizes. You know, of course I love MLB. I'm a huge Cubs fan and have been for, God, it's been more than 25 years now. And while MLB is amazing, there is so much fun to be had in these other leagues. Yes. There is a whole different fan culture in, you have, you know, in Taiwanese and Korean baseball specifically, you've got like cheerleaders who.
Oh my gosh, I was going to hit on that IFG.
Oh, I will never miss a chance to talk about my girls. This is an amazing part of Taiwanese and Korean baseball culture that I just love so much, is that every player has their own unique support song.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
So instead of having a walkout song, they have a cheer that's made specifically for them. The cheerleaders have taught the crowd how to do this cheer.
Oh,
so you, instead
it.
Of just like everybody being like, all right, yay, we're listening to Sanitarium for 10 seconds again. The entire time this dude is up at bat, people are like, they're doing their claps. You've got the whole thing. People have got their little, where are they at? Their little
Sean,
cheer sticks out going
unrelated
back and forth.
I now have an idea for our podcast.
Excellent.
Sean's really good at talking about the Cubs. Sean's really good at talking about the Cubs. Sean's really good. Has some Cubbies.
So I've had the privilege of talking to a few people who served as foreign pitchers in some of these other leagues, and they will tell you, man, there is real home field advantage when you're playing in Taiwan and Korea, because when your guy is up pitching, you are sitting down. You are watching. You are giving this guy all of the space that he needs to focus on the task of throwing that baseball. And when the other guy is up pitching, the other team is up pitching, you have 10,000 people with their bright, shiny sticks waving them all over the place. They're screaming at you. They're doing like this chant that is designed to psychologically destroy your brain and your focus, where you think you're throwing the ball straight and it's going sideways. And that is a whole thing that they have to adapt to. It's so fun. I love like the sheer fan interaction aspect of it. It really does make it feel like you as a fan are a participant in the sport too. And I love that so much.
I'm going on YouTube to watch Brooks Behind the Ivy and baseball overseas, because my gosh, that sounds like so much fun. I've seen a lot of clips, and you actually answer one of my questions. So what would you like to see over there be brought over to MLB?
100% cheerleaders. If I never have to hear, let's go player ever again in my life, it will be too soon. Why do that when you can have ho hey ho hey ho hey ho hey cho ji shi huan ko yan wen, and like you have 10,000 people all doing the same chant, and then like the disco music comes on and everybody's going like dancing around to the Mega Man theme song because their number three hitter is up and he's about to hit a ball to the freaking moon, and you know, and then you've got your guy who saved the world basically during the 2013 Premier 12, and his cheer song is from from some anime or other, and the entire team is or the entire crowd, you know, you've got 15,000 people in the stands just singing along with what it's supposed to be. And like, even after, there's this one stadium in Taiwan that's on like on a noise limit, where after 10 p.m. they have to turn all of the speakers and stuff off. And when that happens and the crowd is so in tune and so into it that you don't even notice until about an inning in that they don't have the speakers on anymore because everybody is just carrying it themselves.
Wow.
It's like goosebumps. I love it so much. I'm on my fifth season watching the CPBL. It is absolutely 100% worth waking up at 3:30 in the morning to watch baseball. To me. I mean, like, y'all, I'm nuts. Don't listen to me. But
meanwhile, in the United States, it turns out we just all learned that if you cheer for a player that's struggling, they start to play better instead of booing them.
Imagine.
Hooray.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good place to stop it for today. And we really just want to thank you for your time and coming on and kind of giving us a glimpse into the other types of baseball that are out there and how to support Cubs that maybe aren't still Cubs but are still playing, or find the next future Cub, like where guys like Shota and Seiya have come from. And Roki Sasaki is going to be a name that you're going to hear a lot this offseason, so why not pay to watch him pitch? And, you know, like, there's already the rumors that he's pre-signed with the Dodgers. But it only depends on the odds and what Ipe got. But that being said, I do want to clarify something.
If you're on Pacific League TV and you're looking for Roki Sasaki, you're looking for the Oryx Buffaloes,
by the way. Thank you so much. That's good. So I just saw a tweet that Sports Illustrated irresponsibly shared that Kyle Hendricks is on the injured list. He is not on the injured list. They think it might have been an AI article of using some like algorithm of tweets of saying he is injured and terrible, and then made the conclusion he's on the injured list and published the article. There is no truth to it. So Kyle Hendricks will get to pitch. He is not hurt, which is good, because this is a rotation that literally just needs bullets, no matter the gun. So
this just in,
don't trust Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is, if you told me, little old me, 15 years ago, when, you know, my mom was probably taking out that swimsuit issue, didn't even know it was a thing, that Sports Illustrated would become the just heap of garbage it is of unreliability, I would just been blown away. That was one of my favorite sports magazines for a really long time.
Yeah.
But once again, this has been another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. Any final thoughts, Mr. Chapin?
Let's just get more than a 500 record here with Seattle and the D-backs. And IFG, thank you so much for being on the show. It's great hearing about baseball, your passion towards the Cubs and baseball in general. So come back anytime.
Thank absolutely. You. Thank you guys so much for having me on. And to the Cubs, let's get some runs.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Let's hopefully the next time we record and the Cubs are playing the Marlins mid-recording, we'll be talking about a pretty successful West Coast trip. Until then, go Cubs, go. Fly that W.
Fly the W.
Well, that's going to do it from here, from Bricks Behind the Ivy. This is Harry Carey. We know you've enjoyed the broadcast and the outcome. Be sure to share, like, and subscribe to this wonderful broadcast that they've done and the podcast going forward. Be sure to also check us out on YouTube and Instagram and hell, whatever else is out there on the airwave. And we want to thank Jeff and Sean for putting this all together and keeping us all Cub fans entertained with their knowledge. You know, I also love to always say that Jeff's last name spelled backwards is Sikasugar. And Sean's is Nipak. My oh my, it never gets old. Well, that's going to do it from here. So from all of us here at Bricks Behind the Ivy, this is Harry Carey saying, go Cubs, holy cow, and so long, everybody.